Well, first of all, I'd like to ask our guests, besides Stefan, what everyone knows about Krishna. Perhaps Guy, you could tell us. Mm-hmm. When you hear the word Krishna, what do you think of? When you hear Krishna, that's what you think of.
Celebration.
Nicholas? We talk about Krishna sometimes here. Now, if I can ask Guy and Nicholas another question. If you had 2 years, if you knew you had 2 years left to live, what would you do? Only 2 years, maximum. But probably, what conclusion would you come to after tramping? You wouldn't go tramping for 2 years, would you? You just head out into the bush and then try to figure things out. Interesting. Of course, actually, we don't know that we have 2 minutes, but to speak of 2 years. So therefore, the most important question is, what is the duty of someone about to die? In fact, that question is the basis of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the spiritual text, graduate study of Bhagavad Gita. The essential question for Srimad Bhagavatam is, what is the duty of someone about to die? Actually, there are two questions, but the two questions become one. What is the duty of a person in all circumstances? And what is the duty of a person about to die? These two questions are one question, because actually in all circumstances, everyone is about to die. So since we're not sure we have 2 years, we might only have 2 minutes. An intelligent human being is always concerned how to make the most of my life right now. That means I have to find out what is life and what is the source of all life. Sometimes you meet people who claim to be conversant about energies. There's this energy and there's that energy. If you meet a scientist, he'll be able to tell you about chemical energy or electrical energy or nuclear energy. If you meet a psychic, they'll tell you about astral energies and auras. And if you meet an impersonalist, they'll tell you about the all-pervading spiritual energy. Each one is more subtle. Psychic energy is more subtle than ordinary material energy. And, of course, the all-pervading spiritual energy, that is something completely different from material energy. But yet, simply understanding that there is all-pervading spiritual energy, that is only the beginning of spiritual life. In the Bhagavatam it is stated, in the Srimad Bhagavatam it is stated, Vadanti tat tat vividas tat pimyaj gyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaiti shokate. Those who actually understand transcendental knowledge know that the absolute truth is perceived in three different ways. As the all-pervading spiritual energy, as the super soul in every heart, not the soul, but the super soul in every heart, and as the all-attractive personality, supreme personality. To see the all-pervading spiritual energy is incomplete spiritual knowledge. It's like when you're approaching a mountain. You all have that experience in New Zealand of driving on the highway, and you're approaching a mountain from afar. It looks like a dark mass up ahead. You don't see any variegatedness in it. You don't see any differentiations. You don't see any varieties. As you come closer, the form of the mountain becomes more distinct. And finally, when you get right up to the base of the mountain, you see all the varieties of life on the mountain. You see houses, roads, perhaps you see people walking about. So you've seen the same mountain from three different perspectives. The absolute truth can be seen from three different perspectives. To understand that there is all-pervading spiritual energy, that is a beginning. But to stop your self-realization right there, that is a mistake. You must go onward to find out what is the source of the energy. What is the source of the material energy? What is the source of the spiritual energy? It is amazing how people become very fascinated by the uniqueness and character and qualities of their own life. Yet, they cannot accept that the Supreme Absolute Truth has uniqueness and character and qualities. In fact, unless we become familiar with the varieties existing in the Supreme Absolute Truth, that means the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Absolute Truth, unless we can understand all that, we will not give up our own little puny qualities, forms, and attachments. We will not give up, better said, we will not give up our attachment to our own individual characteristics. In spite of talking so much about the all-pervading energy or the spiritual energy, when we actually examine our life, we see that we are very much concerned with our own finite, limited qualities and activities. Therefore, if we're going to actually be spiritual persons, we have to become acquainted with the absolute truth in its fullest presence. And we cannot be afraid of personhood and qualities as the absolute truth. You see, there is a tendency that after experiencing pain and misery as individuals in this world, we speculate and think that the highest spiritual understanding is no forms, no qualities, no activities. This is a very common mistake, even amongst spiritual teachers. Due to incomplete realization, based on speculation, that every time I look around in this world, I see there is suffering due to qualities, suffering due to activities, suffering due to individuality. All I have to do then is to get rid of qualities, activities, and personality, merge with the all-pervading spiritual energy, and then I will live happily ever after. The goal of Krishna consciousness is much deeper than that. Yes, there is an all-pervading haze or spiritual energy, but you must go further. Once you get through that all-pervading spiritual haze, then you can enter into the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna. That is the deepest understanding of spiritual knowledge. Therefore, when you hear about Krishna, you're not just hearing about some mythological person. You're not just hearing about some religious figure. If you actually study Bhagavad Gita as it is, you'll understand Krishna as the cause of all causes, the source of all energies, even the source of the all-pervading spiritual energy. That is a very important understanding for Bhagavad Gita. Who is a devotee of Krishna? A devotee of Krishna is one who is very eager to understand Krishna, very eager to talk about Krishna. Now, sometimes people take that to be sectarian. Why Krishna, Krishna, Krishna? Why not Krishna? Why should the Absolute Truth have no characteristics? When we can see in our own life, in this material world, we're always trying to enjoy and relish characteristics. Why do we deny those characteristics in the Supreme Absolute Truth? We are attached so much to our own activities. We like being individuals. We like relishing tastes. But if the goal of spirituality is to give up your individuality and merge into the all-pervading oneness, there'll be no relishing of taste. The actual truth is you cannot give up your individuality completely. Temporarily you can do it, just like if someone hits you over the head with a stick, you'll be stunned. But that doesn't mean that you'll be unconscious always. Temporarily stunned you'll be, and you'll forget your identity. Maybe you'll even go into a coma. But when you come to, once again, you'll act as an individual. So merging into the all-pervading oneness means temporarily forgetting your identity. But you cannot give up your identity. Why can't you give up your identity? Because you are Krishna's parts. That you will always be. And what is the purpose of the part of Krishna? The purpose of the part of Krishna is to engage in loving relationship with the whole, with Krishna. That's what Bhagavad Gita teaches. Yet, so many people have a hard time understanding this about Bhagavad Gita because they cannot get it through their heads that the Absolute Truth is personal. They think if something is personal, that means limited. Even spiritual teachers have this problem. How can the cause of all causes be Krishna? When you think about it, why not? Why not? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says everything emanates from him. So why should we immediately say no? Or as speculators like to say, yes, Bhagavad Gita says everything emanates from Krishna, but it is not really Krishna, it's the unborn or the unmanifest within Krishna. Where does it say that in Bhagavad Gita? Nowhere. But because actually we are envious of Krishna, we don't want to accept things head on. But meanwhile, we're enjoying our life as a person, as an individual. We're trying to relish different qualities and emotional states and relationships. But Krishna? No. Why do you talk so much about Krishna? Who is this Krishna? Krishna is probably this, Krishna is probably that. Why do you all attach such significance to Krishna? We attach significance to Krishna because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains himself And by following what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you will also understand Krishna. Just like if I want to understand you, I ask about you. If you want to understand Krishna, you hear from Krishna. And if you want to verify that Krishna exists, you take Krishna's instructions and you'll find out that Krishna exists. What is the process for finding out about Krishna? You take knowledge directly from Krishna. Just like if you want to find out about Sydney, you listen to a news report or read a newspaper from Sydney. If the process for getting knowledge is perfect, then the message will be perfect. The information will be perfect. The basic example that Srila Prabhupada always gave, if you want to find out who your father is, you ask your mother. Of course, nowadays people will point out, well, many times the mother doesn't know who the father is. But then you're not really dealing with a mother. But if you actually have a mother and you want to find out who your father is, you ask the mother. A genuine mother knows who the father is. So no one will question that process. Now you may try to speculate. I can figure out who my father is because that person looks like me and they're saying that that one is their father. So because that person looks like me, we must have the same father. That's called speculation. And you can try to speculate about the Supreme Absolute Truth. You can try to use your intelligence to figure out the Supreme Reality must be like this, must be like that. But if you really want to understand Krishna, then you take up the perfect process to understand Krishna. You hear from Krishna, I am like this, I am like that. If you want to understand who your father is, you ask the mother. Then there's no doubt. So it's very important to understand in Krishna consciousness how fundamental it is, the right process for getting knowledge. If you can find the right process to get knowledge, then automatically you'll get the right knowledge. If the process is correct, the knowledge will be correct. Just like if you can actually ask your mother, who is your father? You'll be sure to get the right answer. If you can actually ask your mother, and mother means one who knows who the father is. So if you can actually take information from the source, then you know you have real knowledge. But then everybody says, how can you really get knowledge from the source? Just like you can speak, Krishna can also speak. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains about himself. If you want to understand Krishna, you read Bhagavad Gita. If you want to realize what Krishna says about himself, you follow Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita. So simple. Yet, what is our aversion to hearing about Krishna, to understanding Krishna? That is also explained in Bhagavad Gita. Ista dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata. All living entities are born in this world overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. What do we desire? We desire to imitate Krishna. And what do we hate? We hate to follow Dharma. We hate to follow the laws of Krishna. Now you may say, how do we try to imitate Krishna? By reading Bhagavad Gita, you'll understand Krishna as the supreme enjoyer and the supreme controller. And by analyzing our tiny foolish lives, we'll see that at every moment we're trying to be the controller and enjoyer, which is impossible. And at every moment, we refuse to adhere to any universal laws. We all think each person has a right to make his own law. Each person has a right to formulate his own truth, his own codes of behavior. So that shows you aversion, dislike of universal law. We want to imitate Krishna, and we want to do away with Krishna's law. This is our problem. And what is the result of this? It's not that, well, if I don't understand Krishna, no big deal. By not understanding Krishna, you subject yourself to Krishna's illusory energy. And you may even be a great speculator, a great so-called philosopher, but you cannot understand Krishna with your brain. You cannot understand Krishna with your mystic power, even. You cannot understand Krishna with very great acts of charity. You can only understand Krishna if Krishna reveals himself to you. Now, what can we do about that? That is an essential point in understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth. Only if Krishna reveals himself to you can you understand him. So what is the use in our speculating about Krishna? Krishna's like this, Krishna's like that. You'll never know unless Krishna reveals to you. And what does he say in Bhagavad Gita? Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavata. I'm not manifest to everyone. Krishna is telling you quite openly in Bhagavad Gita, I refuse to let everyone see me. I keep a curtain of diluting energy between them and me. So that is the problem. Unless we convince Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, to let us see him, we cannot. Now, some people, they get hung up about this calling God him. Actually, all living entities in this world are female. There's only one male. That is the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna. There's only one supreme enjoyer, supreme proprietor. All living entities are actually female. So when a transcendentalist refers to Krishna as he or him, it has nothing to do with ordinary gender. Because from the viewpoint of reality, all living entities are female. The more we can revive our appetite to hear about Krishna, the more happy we'll be. We're eager to know about so many things, but not about Krishna. Krishna's very name makes you interested in him. Krishna means the all-attractive reservoir of pleasure. Now, who here can say they're not interested in pleasure? Why not find the source of all pleasure? You cannot say that the all-pervading spiritual energy is the source of all pleasure. Because once you talk about energy, you have to talk about the source of energy. Therefore, if we call ourselves lovers of pleasure, we must find out the source of all the pleasure. Therefore, it's quite interesting that although everybody thinks themselves to be very expert in pleasure, they refuse to find out the source of all pleasure. And that means they'll never know what real pleasure is. If you want to find out what real pleasure is, you must take lessons from the source of all pleasure. That is what Bhagavad Gita is. Krishna, the all-attractive reservoir of pleasure, is personally giving instructions what real pleasure is. We have to ask ourselves, am I the part or am I the whole? If I am everything, then I should be self-sufficient and full. But if I'm self-sufficient and full, if I'm the everything, why am I an illusion? Sometimes people say, oh, I'm an illusion because even though I'm the supreme, even though I'm everything, I wanted to experience what it was like to be in ignorance. If you're actually all-pervading and the supreme and the everything, don't you have better things to do than to experience ignorance? Sometimes it's said like that. You can meet, especially in India. And now it's happening in the West. People who go around saying that we are the supreme. It's just we've forgotten and we become, for our own enjoyment, we become absorbed in being ignorant and forgetting our God nature. As if the Supreme Absolute Truth has nothing better to do than to experience ignorance. The more you hear about Krishna, the more you'll understand that Krishna has infinite things to do other than to experience ignorance. In fact, for Krishna, it is impossible to experience ignorance, just like it is impossible for the sun to experience darkness. Darkness means the absence of the sun. But to itself, the sun is never absent. Only to our limited vision, the sun is absent, but never to itself. So Krishna is never subject to his illusory energy, never subject to ignorance. Ignorance is for us who turn our backs to Krishna, and we create a shadow by turning our backs to the sun. Sometimes people say that we are the everything, we are God, we are the ultimate. It's just that in order to understand what real pleasure is, we have to suffer. Therefore, we're going through this suffering right now in life. And they say that you cannot experience what pleasure is without suffering. If that's so, then let us bang you in the head with an iron bar. You'll suffer, and then you can really enjoy. Why not? You say you cannot understand what pleasure is without suffering? So we'll help you suffer, then you can enjoy. No one will agree to that. You will not agree to that at all. We have to decide, am I the all-pervading everything, or am I a part? And if you are part, that means you are dominated. Dominated by what? Dominated by the complete whole. That means you have to find out your relationship with the complete whole. So Bhagavad Gita is meant for that. These topics are essential for every human being. Yet we are so busy doing this, doing that, but we have no time and no humility to inquire, what is my relationship with the Supreme Absolute Truth? What is my relationship with Krishna? I am a tiny, insignificant part. What is my relationship with the whole? So we have to ask ourselves, am I the part or am I the whole? If you accept that you are part of the Supreme Absolute Truth, then, naturally, you want to live your life in agreement with the Supreme Absolute Truth. If you accept the hand as part of the body, then you'll know the purpose of the hand is to coordinate its activities with the whole body. But if you accept the hand as all in all on its own, then that doesn't make any sense. Similarly, none of our activities in conditioned life make any sense because we're trying to be the everything. I must satisfy myself. If you're the part, then you're thinking, how do I live in agreement with the whole? In fact, how do I give pleasure to the whole? That is bhakti yoga. Activities performed for the enjoyment of the Supreme. But our problem is we think I am the Supreme. Consciously or unconsciously, we think I should perform all activities to satisfy me. Now you'll meet many people who will never say that they are the Supreme, that they are the everything. But in their actions, they're always trying to please themselves. So it's the same thing. One way or another, we come down to the same fault. I think I am the everything. That is impossible. Then you say, well, I know I'm just a tiny, insignificant part. I'm just a little whatever. If that's true, then you must find out what you are part of and what your duties are in relation to that complete whole that you're part of. So Bhagavad Gita deals with these issues. Nothing nebulous, nothing vague. But that is a great problem, as we said before about Bhagavad Gita. There's no airy-fairy in Bhagavad Gita. So many times people protest. There's just no room for speculation. How can there be room for speculation if the Supreme Absolute Truth is speaking? When you read Bhagavad Gita, you just don't get any space for whomever, whatever, wherever, however. And people think that must be restricting. But if you can actually take knowledge from the Supreme Source, how is that restricting? That is enlightening. But do they have owls in New Zealand? Yeah. Owls don't like the light. As soon as there's light, they close their eyes. So some people, as soon as they have a chance to hear about Krishna, they close their ears. It's specific. It's personal. It can't be the highest truth. The highest truth is vague. The highest truth is just the whatever. But Krishna, it's definite, specific, personal, exact, specific. It's got to be preliminary spiritual knowledge. Because when you really get way up there in spiritual knowledge, it just becomes, you know, just all words fade away. Everything fades away. It's just probably like the sound an amplifier makes when you have the, you know, when there's no, when you're not speaking into it, but you just hear a hum. That's probably the ultimate, you know. And you yourself, you just disappear into your true nature as everything. People aren't thinking like that. Of course, they talk like that, but in their life, what do they actually do? They're trying to enjoy specific things. Their personal life is very specific, very exact. I want this, I want that, I don't want this, I don't want that. He will treat me like this, and he will not treat me like that. Today I shall dress like this, and I will go to such and such a place, and I will eat this. And we're so exact when it comes to our foolish, insignificant, conditioned lives. But when we hear about Krishna, no. Spiritual knowledge is vague. It's abstract. It's just, words cannot describe it. Sometimes people, they really have a phobia about spiritual knowledge that is very specific and definite. Any real knowledge is specific and definite. If I ask you about Wellington, where is Wellington? And you answer, oh, it's wherever. That means advanced knowledge? No, you'll say, you are useless. Get out of here. I want to find someone who will tell me where Wellington is. Or if I answer you, Wellington is everywhere. And nowhere at the same time. Of course, if you're a fool, you'll say, oh, this sounds very helpful. Oh, you must be a wise person. People, they think that as soon as it's words, it can't be spiritual. They have a phobia against words, not understanding that words are also the energy of the Supreme. If Krishna wants, he can. Let's say you're trying to find your way in the central business district of Wellington, and you're lost in trying to find your way, and I say, well, hey, I'll do you a favor. Here's a map. And what will you say? No maps. I don't accept any maps. If it's in a map, I can't accept it. No, you'll be very happy to get a map. So why do we have this attitude about spiritual knowledge in books? Why do we have an attitude about Krishna? It's because of envy. That is a deeper point to understand. We accept ourselves. We accept this temporary body as ourselves. We accept our mind. We accept our temporary personality with its temporary qualities. We accept our desires. That is for real. But when it comes to the qualities, activities, attributes of Krishna, no, that can't be supreme. It's just too specific. But when you think about it, it is actually specificness that we like about our own life. But when it comes to Krishna, it can't be. A blue boy playing the flute, that cannot be the ultimate. What probably is the ultimate? Let me speculate. The ultimate is probably just the all-pervading everything. Just oneness with no difference, no selves, just the white light, whatever. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says he's the source of everything spiritual and material. Now that is a big claim. You'll never find any other book other than Bhagavad Gita where someone is saying, I'm the source of everything spiritual and material. Everything emanates from me. Now, naturally, if you want to understand Krishna, why not take up the means Krishna gives to understand him? But you cannot do it on your own, just like you cannot force the sun to come before you at midnight. If at midnight you say, I want the sun to appear before me, and you go up on the roof of your house with a torch. Okay. Sun, appear now. What is the use? Similarly, unless you act in such a way that Krishna will reveal himself to you, you'll never understand Krishna. That's why bhakti yoga is required. Bhakti yoga is the yoga of how to convince Krishna through your love and devotion to appear before you. Otherwise, you can even be a spiritual teacher, mystic yogi, whatever. Study many metaphysical texts, birth after birth. Practice mystic yoga, birth after birth, but you'll never get anywhere near Krishna. Because he says, only by your love can I be convinced to reveal myself to you. These are very important points to understand. That is what Krishna means when he says in Bhagavad Gita, only by devotional service can I be understood. So once we understand that the center of life is Krishna, then we can learn how to mold all our activities to pleasing Krishna. So Vedic culture, the original Vedic culture, Vedic knowledge means how every activity, how every aspect of our life can be lived for the pleasure of the Supreme, for the pleasure of the center, the pleasure of the source, the pleasure of Krishna. Whether it's someone who's asking about husband and wife, this and that, yes. There are ways how that relationship can go on for the pleasure of Krishna. But our problem, the reason why we cannot see Krishna, is because we want to live for our own pleasure. As soon as you try to live for your own pleasure, you're putting a blinder over your eyes. You cannot see Krishna. You cannot experience Krishna. And even you can try to do this in a very subtle way. Try to live for your own pleasure in a very subtle way. By thinking, I have the mental prowess or mystic ability in order to understand Krishna. Foolishness. That is pride. So Bhagavad Gita has immense value for human civilization. But in order to appreciate the value of Bhagavad Gita, human civilization has to be humble. Humility is not simply a necessity for those performing ordinary activities in this world. Humility is also necessary for mystic yogis, for impersonalist metaphysicians. What does humility mean? I cannot penetrate into the absolute truth fully on my own. The fact is, you can on your own understand the all-pervading spiritual oneness, but that's as far as you get with mental speculation. Jnana Yoga is called. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bahunam Jamanamante Jnanavam Mam Prabhujate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudhulava. After many births and deaths of speculation about metaphysics, the Jnanis, the scholars of spiritual science, they realize it's impossible. They throw their hands up in the air. They just say, Krishna is everything. Let us take up bhakti yoga, how to please Krishna with love and devotion. But it is true. It is possible that with your mental speculation, your metaphysical philosophical inquiry, you can get to the point of understanding the all-pervading spiritual energy. But that is just the outer precincts of spiritual understanding. The very beginning. You must penetrate through that all-pervading spiritual oneness and find out the source of that oneness. Find out the source of all variety. Otherwise, after temporarily playing around with the oneness, you'll go back to your material varieties because you haven't realized what spiritual varieties are. You can talk about annihilating the self, but that is only a temporary thing, like going into a coma or being bludgeoned over the head with a brick and losing consciousness. That's why I laugh sometimes when I read. Sometimes I look over books that say how so-and-so spiritual teacher or so-and-so yogi was mercifully came down from the all-pervading oneness in order to teach humanity. Now, if you're actually merged, quote-unquote, in the all-pervading oneness, who is it that comes down? It said that out of compassion, he came down from the oneness to teach us. But if you're merged in the all-pervading oneness, how do you feel compassion? And what is it that comes down? It's just the oneness. How can there be someone who comes? If you've been perfectly merged in the oneness, how do you feel compassion? And who feels compassion? Therefore, for impersonalist speculators, the existence of variety is always a great problem. So we don't want to replace one form of sense gratification for another. That's why Srimad Bhagavatam condemns both karmic activity, activity performed for your own material purposes, and it also condemns those who try to philosophically speculate to achieve so-called liberation into the impersonal oneness. That's also cheating. You cannot get rid of yourself. You are the eternal part and parcel of Krishna. You can't get around that. You can try to obliterate that through materialistic activity. You can try to obliterate it through philosophical speculation. But still the fact is there. You are Krishna's part. You are part of the complete whole. Now what are you going to do about that? So that's what Bhagavad Gita basically tells you. What are you going to do about it? You're a part. You're not the whole. So what are you going to do? What shall you do? Shall you continue to engage in karmic activity? Shall you speculate? Shall you practice mystic yoga? What are you going to do? If you want to understand the source of everything, if you want to understand Krishna, the all-attractive reservoir of pleasure, there's only one way. You have to please Krishna, and then Krishna will reveal himself to you. Otherwise, we're scratching our heads in the darkness, either as materialists, as metaphysicians, as mystic yogis, whatever, we're just scratching our heads. We may have this power or that power, whatever, this psychic ability, that mystic ability, so what? Where is the understanding that you are part of the complete whole? And what is your understanding of the relationship? Until we understand that all pleasure is coming from Krishna, we will continue to look for pleasure in this world while speaking words about mysticism and metaphysical this and that. After all is said and done, whether they are karmic workers or mystic yogis or metaphysical scholars, they all end up chewing the chewed, tasting that which has already been tasted. Especially if you deny the existence of spiritual variety, you'll be forced to try to relish material variety. Therefore, whether you consider yourself a karmic worker, that means one who works to enjoy the results of his activities, whether you consider yourself a metaphysical scholar, you're trying to understand what is real, what is false, what is eternal, what is temporary, or you're trying to practice mystic yoga, develop mystic powers, the Bhagavatam in the 11th canto describes mystic powers. how you can become so small that you enter, you can enter into stone, how you can become so light that you can ride on a sunbeam into the sun, how you can become huge, colossal in size, how you can reach to any planet and pick whatever you want, how you can even imitate the laws of nature, and how you can even make extraordinary things happen that violate the laws of nature. You may have mystic power like that, but so what? What are you and what are you a part of? Real ability is to act in such a way that Krishna will reveal himself to you. And that's what Bhakti Yoga is about. Otherwise, we're in darkness, trying to gratify ourselves as workers or speculators or scholars or this or that. But we have no ultimate understanding, because the only way you get ultimate understanding from the Supreme Absolute Truth is to please the Supreme Absolute Truth, to please Krishna. So that is the basis of Bhagavad Gita. Any questions? They think, well, that's actually cold because it leaves me no room to maneuver. But actually, the specifics of Bhagavad Gita open up the way to infinite love. But because we're attached to our false conceptions and false ways of existence, we feel threatened by Krishna. That's like saying the hand feels threatened by the whole body. That's how insane it is. This is because we are in illusion.
Sometimes a problem because there's a gap between that person feeling that they can actually engage themselves and their propensity in Krishna's service, because the way that Krishna consciousness is presented is in such a specific, abrupt, almost regimental way, but it comes across like, you know, my individual characteristics are mine. Like you, last night, I understand you talked about, you know, the Sarasam and, you know, Kiranam Kama. So sometimes it comes across like there is no room, there's only specific, there's no room to actually be an individual.
Ultimately, you have to get to the point that we are the part, we're not the whole. You can ignore that for a while, if you like, but sooner or later you have to come to that point. Just like at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, okay, Arjuna, abandon all your conceptions and just surrender to me. Ultimately, you can't avoid that point. You can put the medicine on sugar, but ultimately that has to be there. And it is actually enlivening to hear what is real. We shouldn't have even those who are trying to practice bhakti yoga shouldn't have an inferiority complex about what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. It's actually enlivening to hear what is real, what is true. And if you feel enlivened about that, others will also feel enlivened. But don't expect everyone to want to hear about reality. Reality is what's threatening because we are in conditioned existence. Instead of being afraid of illusion, we're afraid of Krishna. That is our problem. What is our real individuality? I am Krishna's eternal servant. Now I am misidentifying with my body and mind, my temporary qualities, and I'm serving the illusory energy. But my real individuality is simply to live for Krishna's pleasure. That is the truth. Now, how to get to the point of that truth? There are different remedial measures, but they're all leading to that point. People need to hear the truth, but it's not our truth. It's not that you're making this up. It's not that I'm making this up. You simply say what Krishna says. If the mother says, that's your father, if she's a real mother, then you take it. Now, well, mother, I wish you could be a little more vague, you know, about who my father is. Yeah. Must you be so specific, mother? I mean, could you leave a little room for doubt in me, please, who my father is? That's probably what people would say today. Could you, you know, you're my mother, I want to know who my father is, but do you have to be specific? Could you leave some room for doubt, please? Leave some room for so I can speculate. I know, mother, if you really love me, what you'll tell me is, well, son, it could be this man, it could be that man, whoever, whatever. That's probably what we'd say these days. But if mother says, this is your father, then we become a, mother, how could you be so definite? How could you be so specific? Mother, please, could you be a little more non-sectarian? She'll say, no, this is your father. Mother, wait a minute, you know. Are you implying that you don't like all the other men in the world? It's only this man? Are you implying that he was the only one? No. The mother says, this is your father. And the intelligent person accepts. You're my mother. You know who the father is. He's the one. Similarly, we have to accept that the Supreme Absolute Truth can give us knowledge. And if we take knowledge from the Supreme Absolute Truth, from Krishna, then we know. Nothing to be ashamed of. Everyone can know. Everyone can learn how to act in such a way that Krishna will reveal himself to them. That is the fun. That is the pleasure. That is the joy. Any other questions? Yes. So is Columbus, huh? It appears he had some minor mystic abilities to see into the future. People today think that's quite extraordinary, but if you read the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find that it is considered a very insignificant, inferior mystic power, the ability to see the future. The Bhagavatam says that there are 8 main mystic powers, 10 subordinate mystic powers, and then another group of very inferior mystic powers, and the ability to see the future and to see into the past is considered an inferior mystic power. Not even secondary, tertiary, on the third grade level. But, you know, these days people think that's the greatest. It's considered very insignificant. So, there's no doubt some people have the ability to see the future. We're not concerned with that. We know the future. that if we don't become Krishna conscious, we'll get another body. So what are you going to do about that? What did Nostradamus tell you about that? Here, I'll read you. Krishna predicts the future. Right here in Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 2, text 13. Anyone can understand this prediction of the future. Deino svinyata dehe komaram yovanam jara tatade hantada pratya jiras tatranamuyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So there is a prediction of the future that everybody can relate to. The child will become a young adult. The young adult will become an adult. The adult will become an old person. The old person will die. Now, do you need Nostradamus to understand that? Now, what are you going to do about that? Nostradamus can't tell you what to do about it either. Any other questions?
We talk about the subject of Krishna and how he is and what he does, in particular activities that he performs.
That's right. You used to read a lot of Buddhist books, didn't you?
No.
You told me something in Christ. What did you tell me?
That's
Mike. Oh. Okay. Sorry, I'm confused.
We talk about Krishna being unlimited and his pastimes being unlimited. It seems when you're reading, when we talk about
Krishna.
Does Krishna perform any other activities that aren't or that aren't sort of
described in Bhagavatam?
Yeah.
You cannot fully describe Krishna's activities because Krishna is infinite. Impossible. But you do want to relish what is given about Krishna, but Krishna himself cannot get to the end of all his glories. You told me you were doing something. I remember. It was something. Yes, it was. It was. In Christchurch, you told me you were into something. What was it? Huh? It was something. Sure, wasn't him. It was Mike, you sure? Okay, all right. Any other questions? Yes.
I'm more interested in the subject of
idea what it is.
Jivera
Swokoi Krishnara Nityadas. Your individuality is that you are the eternal servant of Krishna. Based on that real individuality, you have accumulated temporary individuality. Okay, let's look at another one. In the Bhagavatam chapter, Rainy Season in Vrindavan, it's described that sometimes the clouds cover the moon, and the clouds shine because the clouds are emanating the moonlight. So a less intelligent person thinks how bright the clouds are, not understanding that the light is actually coming from the moon. And a less intelligent person thinks, in fact, that the clouds are so luminous, they're so full of light, when actually the purpose of the clouds is to cover the moon. They're actually dull compared to the moon. So in the same way, our temporary individuality seems so important and so full of life and light, when actually all it's doing is obscuring the original soul. It's obscuring our original identity as a soul. So when you look next time at night, you see clouds covering the moon, you think of this example from the Bhagavata. The clouds seem to be full of light, so luminous, so nice, but actually the clouds are simply getting their energy, their light from the moon. We think the clouds are, they're very luminous and light, but actually the clouds are dull compared to the moon. So the Bhagavatam explains that similarly, the false ego seems to have a life of its own. It seems to be so light and luminous, when actually the false ego is simply filled with the perverted energy from the soul. And in fact, the false ego is covering the soul. Does that help you understand it better? You should read that verse in that chapter, Rainy Season in Vrindavan. So shall we make a big deal about the clouds that cover the moon? How light they are? No, we understand the light's coming from the moon. Nevertheless, and I'm sure what you want to hear is that we can't immediately give up the clouds that cover the moon, right? It's gradual. Long time. Right? You can't just yank the clouds away and let the moon shine. Oh, that's very bad. Slowly. Very slowly. Right? Because actually, you know, those clouds are kind of nice. You know, that covering is kind of nice. You don't want to give it up too quickly, you know? I'll play with it for a while. Yeah, we're thinking, what's going to happen to my false ego, which is so full of light and light and love? Don't take it away from me immediately. When you think the other way, that the false ego is actually covering the real you, then you want to get rid of it right away. You can't remain neutral. It's either you're swept away one way or the other. Choose the flow that you want to be swept away in. But you can't remain neutral. You know, some kind of twilight zone.
But then why does the same time you can show up with the first energy one time and not trying to not feel it and just quite hard?
Because we don't like taking advice. We've got to do it our way. That's what mental speculation means. I'm going to do it my way. Wait one day when you're, if you have a family, and then your kids will tell you, Mata, I'm going to do it my way. And you say, no, no, I know what's best. No, no, I'm going to do it my way. No, you should do what I say. I understand what's to be done. No, no, Mata, even if you understand what's to be done, I've got to come to the conclusion in my own way. Then what are you going to say? Just accept my authority. No, no. It's something... The kid will tell you something I have to feel from my own heart. Then what would you say? Yeah, you're probably right. Do whatever you like. Will you say that? You better find out before you have a family. Is that the kind of family you want? Where the mother tells the kid, okay, whatever you feel is best, just whatever's in your heart, just consult your own intuition. You've got to kind of find it out your own way. That's a very, I like these points you're making. They're actually very important points. He's actually phrasing them very simply and clearly. Yes, it's hard to understand how someone else could tell someone what to do. And that's the whole nature of Bhagavad Gita. Now you understand the problem everyone has with Bhagavad Gita. It's someone else telling you what to do. Krishna says it's like this. And you say, no, it's not like that. Who is this Krishna to say that? That's all of our problem. Iccha dvesha, desire to imitate Krishna, aversion to Krishna's supremacy. That's our problem. See how deep it cuts? All right, now in your classes you can speak about that. If you can't understand it, your kids won't either. If the process for acquiring knowledge is perfect, then the knowledge will be perfect. Find the right way to find out who your father is. If that process for finding out who your father is perfect, you'll have perfect knowledge. Ask your mom. If she's a real mom, she knows who the father is. If she doesn't know, she's not a real mom. She's something else. I used to be able to say prostitute, but now I think it's called sex worker. So that's not a mom. But if you want to know who your father is, find the perfect process. It's not by looking around, who looks like me? If somebody looks like me, they must be my brother or sister. I'll ask them who their father is. That's speculation. Jnana yoga. Metaphysical speculation. Ask your mother. If you want to understand what is to be done, what's not to be done, ask the source. If you want to understand what pleasure is, you ask the source of all pleasure. That is Bhagavad Gita. So difficult we have dealing with this point. Any other final questions? Okay.
Can you describe practically how you experience Krishna?
Yes.
Will you?
Yes, I will. See this? I just drank some water. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm the taste of water. I'm the light of the sun and the moon. So you can start in that way. Every time you drink water, you can think, Krishna is the taste. Whenever you see the light of the sun and the moon, Krishna is that light. That's a good beginning. You read in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this first verse 1 of the seventh chapter, Maya sakta mana partha yogam yunjan manasraya asamshayam samagra mam yatagyasasi tashtrinu. Krishna says, now here, Stephanie, How by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me. You, Stephanie, can know Krishna in full, free from doubt. Now what do you want? You can know Krishna in full, free from doubt. Anyone can. But you take the process that Krishna gives. And if you know Krishna in full, free from doubt, then you're always engaged in trying to please Krishna. And that's a personal thing. Between the supreme person and the tiny person. Without any all-pervading oneness getting in between. The all-pervading oneness is a fact. It exists, but it's inferior, better put, it's incomplete understanding. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm the basis of the all-pervading oneness. It's based on me. So we do not say that there is no all-pervading oneness, but we just say it's insignificant compared to Krishna. Understand that? We don't say there's no all-pervading oneness. do not say that. It exists, but it's not the ultimate. And until you understand that, you'll always be forced to get your varieties and tastes from the material world. Because you have no idea how to taste the varieties of personal existence in the Supreme Absolute Truth. Any other questions?
You see Krishna in the beginning?
Everything is Krishna's energy. First, understand the energy belongs to Krishna. Then, whenever you see the energy of Krishna, you will think of Krishna. Just like if I do not know you're here and I see this red jacket hanging on a hook, I will think, Stephanie! So, whenever you think of Krishna's energy that's belonging to him, then you'll think of Krishna. And that's the beginning of Krishna consciousness. And what is the most recommended way of thinking of Krishna and seeing Krishna? To chant the Hare Krishna mantra. So it's good you're asking questions about Krishna. So you take Krishna's way, how to see Krishna. And then your life will be perfect. No more vagueness. No more energy this, energy that. Get to the source, get to the root of it all. All right. All right. All right. All right. All right. All right.